So welcome to episode 4 of the Leverage Podcast from the Bailey Group. I'm Michael Kithcart, and today I'm here with Jenny Evans. She's the founder and CEO of Powerhouse Performance, an award-winning author, speaker, and expert on resiliency, stress, and performance. Jenny and I will be talking about what's become a major issue in corporate America. Stress. Stress and its impact on individuals as well as companies. So today she'll share her expertise on transforming cultures from stressed to resilient, how to increase stress thresholds, and what it takes to thrive in an increasingly demanding business environment. So let's get started. Jenny, welcome to the Bailey Group.
It's great to be here. Thanks.
So tell me, first and foremost, how in the world did you become an expert in stress and resiliency?
You know, I started out wanting to be a psychiatrist. And then I started teaching fitness classes as a way to try to help pay for school. And as I began to learn more about the physiology of the body, I just became so fascinated by when you really understand how to give your body the right stimulus, you can get it to adapt and change in some really amazing ways. And that the brain and the body are one, they're really not separate, and that there's a lot of chemistry that goes on sort of behind the scenes. I mean, I was one of those people that would do crazy things because it just seemed to make sense to me, like I'll exercise on an empty stomach because my body's burning more fat, you know, and really frustrated with why am I not getting the results that I want because this just makes sense. And then learning, like, there's what you think sounds good and then there's what really happens physiologically.
So that's not good?
No.
Okay. Why not?
Okay, so when you go too long without eating and there's not sufficient glucose or energy in your bloodstream, it stimulates the stress response, mm-hmm. which releases a hormone called cortisol, which does a lot of really, really good things as it relates to stress, but it is a fat storage hormone, which was really important for our ancestors because mm-hmm. they had to do a lot of fighting and fleeing. Food was very scarce. Body fat was an insurance policy. Mm-hmm. So when you're exercising on an empty stomach, your body's actually in fat storage mode. And so what your body will do to use as a primary fuel source is actually start breaking down muscle tissue, which is stored protein, mm-hmm. and using that as energy, which is usually like the opposite. We don't go work out of like, I am just too muscular to fit into these pants.
Right.
So, you know, it's things like that when you realize, oh, ding, ding, ding. You know, understanding how the body really works allows you to just run more efficiently and effectively mm-hmm. as a person, as an operating system, which then allows you to perform better at work, at home, to get better recovery, and for your health to improve too.
Okay. Well, and a lot of that, you know, makes sense, right? Logically. And then we get into our day. So I'm just curious, because your background kind of came from that athlete perspective. Did you ever suffer from stress? Were you ever a stress case? Can you relate to your audience?
Never been stressed a day in my life. You know, it's one of those things, sometimes like we teach most what we need to learn mm-hmm. ourselves. I mean, I am one of those people that actually, you know, stress is not bad. It's actually how you expand your capacity. And I think I'm also one of those people that's always looking to push myself, whether it's to be a better athlete or to be a better speaker or a better entrepreneur or a better mom or wife. So I see stress as something that's really good when you understand really how to use it and how important it is to get recovery after stress. Mm-hmm. A lot of times the problem is there's so much stress without recovery that instead of that being a growth opportunity, it actually turns it into where, you know, the system actually becomes weaker, whether that's, you know, mentally, emotionally, or physically. Mm-hmm. So again, kind of understanding the body's stress response is evolutionarily designed to be brilliant. The end result of the stress response is that balance is restored to the system. Mm-hmm. But the critical step for that to happen is this short burst of intense physical activity of actually fighting or fleeing. Because when we do that, it burns off those stress hormones and then releases a new set of hormones that counteract the negative side effects mm-hmm. of those stress hormones. Okay. But think about the average day of you're sitting behind a desk for maybe 8 to 10 hours. You're in long meetings where you're not getting any movement. You're trapped in rush hour traffic. You are in the airport and your flight's been canceled. Mm-hmm. We sit. And so what happens is those stress hormones just circulate and recirculate throughout the body, which affects brain structure, brain function, the foods that we crave, where we store fat on the body, why we can't sleep. So my resiliency strategy is really about, let's understand the chemistry and physiology of stress, because if we can reset that and really arrest the problem at its core, mm-hmm. then you don't have those negative side effects to try to manage or deal with later on the backside.
Okay. Well, and I really appreciated in your book, The Resiliency Revolution, that you're saying we're not trying to get rid of stress. You feel like a realist, right? You know, so it's not about getting rid of it. It's about how do we become able to handle it so that it doesn't have some of those negative impacts that you just described.
Exactly. Because usually when people start talking about stress, well, let's talk about some stress management techniques, some mm-hmm. stress reduction techniques.
Squishy balls.
Yeah, which sounds great. Like, I'm going to take this squishy ball and punch you in the face with it.
Right.
Because the reality is, nobody's job is ever going to start asking less of them. Nobody's family, friends, loved ones are going to ask less of them. So stress reduction is not possible. So as an exercise physiologist, my approach is, then you only have one other option, and that is to build your resiliency. And what I mean by building your resiliency is really two things. Mm-hmm. There's a way to train your body to recover from stress more quickly and more efficiently so that you are back on your feet and you are ready for that next stressor that is coming. And there is also a way to train your body to raise its threshold for stress so that you can successfully deal with more in your life before that stress response or that fight or flight response is triggered.
Okay. And again, because we're talking to busy executives, you know, entrepreneurs, people starting and growing businesses, leaders of big companies, these are people that don't really have a lot of time mm-hmm. on their hands. And so, again, what you're saying sounds logical. How long does it take to retrain your body?
The subtitle of my book is Build Your Resiliency and Conquer Your Stress 60 Seconds at a Time. Mm-hmm. Usually, when we think, okay, you know what, I've got to get control of my, you know, my nutrition and my recovery and my sleep, it's the brand new you, tomorrow morning, I'm going to do 100 things differently.
Right.
Well, change stimulates the stress response. And when we're stressed out, we seek the comfort, safety, and security of habit and routine, which may be the exact same habits and routines we're trying to change. And so when you understand, again, the physiology of the body and the brain, that if we can take some behavior change strategies and break them down into really simple, doable steps that really are not going to make that primitive part of the brain go, wait a minute, this sounds complicated. This mm-hmm. sounds like there's potential for failure. This sounds like I'm going to have to deny myself. I'm going to have to work really hard. If we can break it down into these really simple things, it kind of flies under the radar of what I call the caveman brain, who doesn't really like change. And in the book, I talk about, it's not so much about using your self-discipline and willpower to make change in your life, but mm-hmm. creating an environment of optimal defaults. And what an optimal default is it's a change to your environment that pushes you unconsciously into making a healthier, more resilient choice. So for instance, two of my favorite optimal defaults. I like ice cream. So if I put just one scoop of ice cream in a normal size bowl, that looks really pathetic. And my caveman brain is saying, like, for real, you're denying me. But if you put that ice cream in a wine glass, now this wine glass looks like it's full of ice cream. And so simple change like that, you will unconsciously eat less food just by changing either your plate size or your bowl size or even the utensils that okay. you're using. Mm-hmm. You know, when we talk about training your body to build its resiliency, a 60-second burst of physical activity kind of like recreates that fight or flight response that our ancestors used to restore balance. So you are walking out of a stressful meeting, walking into your next meeting that you know is also going to be stressful, mm-hmm. but instead of taking the elevator, you decide to go that two flights of stairs and you just boogie up those stairs as fast as you can. That intense physical activity is now burning off those stress hormones, and it's similar to cardiovascular interval training.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Cardiovascular interval training raises our level of fitness much more quickly. And how you measure somebody's level of fitness is how quickly your heart rate recovers after the stress of exercise is removed.
Okay.
So it's training your body to recover from stress,
mm-hmm.
physically, mentally, emotionally. And when you're getting these short bursts, you're actually training your body to recover from those more quickly and more efficiently as well. So that improves your resiliency. So I'm not talking about like you have to start exercising an hour at a time, mm-hmm. 6 days a week. What I'm talking about is accumulating short bursts of physical activity where maybe you can accumulate 10 minutes mm-hmm. in the morning and then 10 minutes over your lunch hour and then 10 minutes later in the day. Of you're changing your chemistry every time you do that.
Yeah.
And you're training your body to be able to better handle stress.
So that just gets easier and easier the more times you do it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so one of the things that I heard you say in that you first have to notice that you just came out of a stressful meeting and are going into another one, right?
Yeah.
So talk to us a little bit about the importance of the awareness and how people can even begin to start noticing that they are in a stressed state, because if that's our constant state as Americans, for the most part, corporate America, I would think awareness would be an important first step.
Yeah. I mean, when you think about, you bring up a really good point that the norm is this fast pace, high productivity, short deadlines. It is a high level of stress that's pretty constant for most people. So my advice would be just assume that you're really stressed out.
Okay.
And what you can do is set your phone or your computer to maybe say, you know what, 3 times a day. It's gonna go off, and that is my signal for 60 seconds to stand up. And even if I'm in my office, I can just do jumping jacks or burpees or jump squats or find that set of stairs to go up and down really quick. To just say, even if I do that 3 times a day, mm-hmm. and I'm changing my chemistry every time I do that,
mm-hmm.
allows our advanced brain to come back online. Caveman brain calms down.
Mm-hmm.
So now with advanced brain, I'm making better decisions. I'm able to think long-term, because when we're stressed out, survival mode puts us into survival mode, short-term,
mm-hmm.
not making great decisions, which is why when we're stressed out, we do things that we regret later on, because caveman brain is really driving the bus. So, you know, it's not even so much about changing your physiology, I think, for most executives.
Mm-hmm.
They just want to function better, be more productive, make better decisions, which
right.
then make them more successful, makes the organization more successful. Because when you get an entire, you know, culture that's operating in survival mode
mm-hmm.
every day and making those decisions with caveman brain
right.
driving the bus, that's really scary. I mean, when you think about what that's doing to productivity, success of a business, month over year over time, that's huge.
Well, and there are lots of statistics, and some of those are in your book, as well as what it really costs American companies, both in time out, it's like 550 million hours, is that right? Of like lost work time because of stress, and that it can cost $200 to $300 billion.
Yeah, you know, so I think there's a lot of cost to the business on a lot of levels of, you know, lost productivity, whether that means like you're so stressed out and burned out, you quit,
mm-hmm.
or you have to take a mental health day, or you physically show up to work, but you're psychologically, spiritually, emotionally, you're not there. And then thinking about, you know, these connections between these stress hormones and how they can really negatively impact health.
Mm-hmm.
So cortisol is linked to increased cardiovascular disease, stroke, certain forms of cancer, diabetes, which are extremely expensive from a healthcare perspective for organizations.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, what I tell people is, you know, you're training to build your resiliency to stress, but it's also improving your productivity and it's also improving your health. And you're not on a diet. You're not on this exercise plan. You're working to just better handle all the stress of your day-to-day professionally as well as personally. And when you focus strategically, your health takes care of itself, which how great is that? Because what's a big stress for a lot of people is, how am I going to take care of my health? How
right.
can I lose weight? How can I eat better? All that stress on top of your normal professional stress.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot.
Right. So when you're everything that you've mentioned kind of talks about you can take some personal accountability for this. So this is something that I can do individually. I can start building in the 10-10-10 that you mentioned. So I'm kind of getting my bursts three times a day. So what about for the people that are leading, you know, small or even large organizations, and what you're saying really connects for them in a way that it's like, oh wow, I can not only see myself in this, but I can see my team. I would like to help my entire organization be able to deal with stress better. Mm-hmm. Do you have a couple of ideas that, you know, leaders could be thinking about of how this could be spread out throughout the entire company?
Yeah, I mean, there's the obvious one of when you're training and educating employees about resiliency and sort of like, here's how it works and here's what you can do individually on your own and how it's going to affect the organization. But what is really piquing my interest lately is, again, this focus on the environment. Again, these optimal defaults. So, for example, in countries where you have to opt in to donate your organs, mm-hmm. to be an organ donor,
yeah.
Participation is about 15%. When the default option is that you're already enrolled to be an organ donor and you have to opt out to not participate, mm-hmm. you get about 98% participation rate.
Wow,
so
huge difference.
The choice is the same, participate or not. Mm-hmm. You have complete control over that choice. But what the default option is set to makes such a huge impact that no education or training program could ever dream to achieve. So thinking about, okay, again, how do I get these environments of optimal defaults? So, you know, when companies have big meetings and they're bringing in food, a lot of times it's soda, it's cookies, it's sweets. And in the book I talk about nutritionally, we add a lot of stress. Physiologically. So just different choices on what foods are available. How do you run a meeting? You know, are meetings 60 minutes? That actually means it's about 70 minutes and then you're 10 minutes late to your next meeting. Mm-hmm. But I have organizations that have gone down to 45 or 50 minute meetings. And so maybe they use that extra 5 minutes to say, okay, everybody stand up. We're going to do a stretch. We're going to do some of these resiliency training cards, or I'm actually going to allow you 10 minutes to get yourself a snack so that you've got good blood glucose. You can actually go to the bathroom.
Novel concept.
I know, which is great. You know, and thinking about like what other things do you offer? Like, what's the norm in mm-hmm. your office environment? Is the norm where people sit and they don't move and they're working long hours, or is the norm where there's access to healthy foods that you encourage movement within the office? I mean, mm-hmm. you know, do you have standing workstations? Do you have walking workstations? Because sitting is also terribly stressful on the body. It's horrible for productivity. So little things like this, like maybe it's Sneaker Tuesday, where everybody's encouraged to wear their sneakers on Tuesday and have walking meetings on Tuesday instead of sitting meetings. So things that you can do that don't require a huge financial investment, mm-hmm. but just every day you're nudging people into behaviors that improve their resiliency, their performance, and their health.
So you're really shifting the culture of an entire company.
Kind of without them knowing it. I mean, it almost sounds a little bit weird where you're like, I'm completely manipulating people. But again, thinking about like these optimal defaults, it is a manipulation, but for the good. I mean, think about what happened with banning smoking or trans fats. Those are optimal defaults that got millions of people to stop smoking, to stop eating trans fats. Mm-hmm. I really don't think the key to change is educating and then telling people to take personal responsibility. Because we live in societies where you're sedentary. You go to your work, you sit at your computer, food is everywhere that's, you know, highly processed, it's high in fat and mm-hmm. high in sugar. Well, evolutionarily, we're hardwired to eat as much as we can while we can and to move as little as possible. Well, now we've created environments where that's the default. And willpower is easily exhausted. And so when you constantly don't have to move and in, you know, food is everywhere, well, good luck trying to resist that or trying to get yourself to exercise more often. For most people, that doesn't work.
Yeah.
So looking at what are some small changes that we can create to the environment that just, it's a little bit of impact, but it happens every single day to every employee.
Right.
Over time makes a difference.
Well, this really seems to be in support. So every organization is going through change, and change is constant now. So this seems to be a way that you can incorporate change into your culture so that it becomes more of the norm, so that it can, people can be more ready to handle the uncertainty that they get faced with when new initiatives pop up, if a company's been acquired. But if you have this as kind of your baseline and it really do make it part of, as you say, your environment, the culture, that you're actually making people more adaptable and ready to meet those constant changes.
Right.
So that must, that can translate into the bottom line. That, you know, that can make good executive sense.
For sure. And like you said, change is happening. And if change is not happening in your organization, you should probably be a little bit nervous of, like, then you're resting on your laurels and, you know, good things are probably not happening. But, you know, in the book, you know, the caveman brain that I talk about, primitive brain, I call him Sneaky Pete. Mm-hmm. And it's even kind of nice that organizations that I work with now to say, even this thing, like, okay, so we just announced, we've just been acquired, or we're going to completely change or revamp something, and people are just like quietly inside freaking out. For organizations to say, okay, we know that Sneaky Pete is totally running wild right now, and people can kind of go like, oh my gosh, you're right. I can tell my caveman brain has just gone to that negative place where change is not good. To just sit back for a minute and just say, okay, I know what happens when Sneaky Pete is in control, and I know right now he's the last person we need making strategic business choices. Mm-hmm. So how can we get advanced brain back online so that we can really objectively look at the long-term benefit of this change? Because we're usually just in the moment, and when we're uncomfortable in the moment, we just want that discomfort to go away.
Right.
And so we'll be reactive. We'll make those short-sighted decisions.
Well, I know in the book, too, there are several examples of people who have really kind of taken on the resiliency challenge of just, some really don't even have anything left to lose, right? They're just so stressed out that it's really impacting the quality of their life. So what, just because you've worked with so many people in this situation, what would you say are some of the general benefits that people see out of committing to building that resiliency?
You know what I've seen? So yeah, in between each chapter, there's a story of like a real person who real demands of everyday life and the positive change that they were able to make. But I think what really struck me is, you know, when people came to this and they were like, all right, I'm just really stressed to the max and I'm really unhealthy. So if I could better handle my stress and I could lose weight, I'd be really happy. But in the end, when I would interview them and say, okay, like, tell me, like, what are the greatest things that have happened since you've become more resilient? People said almost the same two things every single time. I'm sleeping so much better. That I think people didn't realize how sleep deprived they really were, or just thought, like, this is just the norm. Nobody sleeps well during the evening, and that they had better energy. And not just better levels of energy, but better positive energy. So not only at work, but I think when they left work and came home, they were able to show up as the best version of themselves for their loved ones or their leisure time activities, instead of waking up exhausted, slogging it through this really, really long day, just trying to make it through the day so that they could come home, get on the couch, turn on the TV, and just check out and fade out until the next day, and then repeat it over and over and over again. So, you know, I found those things to be the biggest things that people were most excited about, is I'm sleeping better and I have so much more energy now.
Well, it sounds like, I know I for sure could benefit from that, and hopefully all of our listeners could too. And so with that, I'd like to, first of all, thank you for your valuable insights.
You're welcome.
And I know for myself, I'm feeling calmer already, And I would like to encourage all of today's listeners to check out Jenny's new book. It's called The Resiliency Revolution, Your Stress Solution for Life 60 Seconds at a Time. And it's available on Amazon and Barnes & Noble. So, Jenny Evans, thank you very much.
Thank you, Michael.